As we enter the final weeks of 2020, some parts of the world are seeing an economic rebound, while others are struggling to make it with pandemic restrictions.
It's a trade-off. You take a hit to economic growth in the short term to avoid more damage in the long term.
We'll look at whose economy is thriving and who faces the biggest challenges. Plus, as we approach Black Friday, a look at retail earnings and what may help boost future sales. And if you're worried about a Thanksgiving weight gain on top of those pandemic pounds, here's why getting a high-end exercise bike may be an exercise in patience. It's Tuesday, November 24th. I'm Mark Stewart with the Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. U.S. stock futures climbed after President Trump said he would cooperate with President-elect Joe Biden's transition to the White House nearly 3 weeks after Election Day. The chief of the General Services Administration, otherwise known as the GSA, said that her agency would provide Biden's team with federal resources meant to assist in a smooth transition of power after formally holding up the transition, citing uncertainty in the results. We talked to Politics News editor Tim Hanrahan about the significance of the move.
The ascertainment by the GSA on Monday sort of puts the official gears in motion. So, for instance, it allows him to get the same intelligence briefing that the president and other top officials get. It also clears the way for top coronavirus officials, other top officials, to speak to the transition team as if they are part of the administration. Previously, Biden's team was still at arm's length as the Democratic nominee for president, but not quite the president-elect.
Trump said he had instructed aides to cooperate with the transition approved by the GSA, though he pledged to continue his legal efforts to overturn the election result. Biden is moving forward with a series of appointments. As we exclusively reported yesterday, former Federal Reserve Chairwoman Janet Yellen is expected to be nominated to become the first woman in the Treasury Secretary job, while former Secretary of State John Kerry will be in charge of tackling climate change. Days after announcing an investment of billions of dollars into electric vehicles, General Motors is no longer supporting the Trump administration's legal battle to strip California's authority to set its own fuel efficiency regulations. The company said its goals for green cars are aligned with the state and the incoming Biden administration. That's the sound of China's lunar probe blasting off early Tuesday. The probe's mission is to collect some rocks and debris with the aim of becoming the third nation to return samples from the moon after the U.S. and the former Soviet Union, which haven't done it since the 1970s. Here's the Journal's Trevor Moss about where this might lead.
China launched the Chang'e 5, the latest in a series of increasingly ambitious lunar probes. This mission is chiefly significant for being yet another milestone in China's relatively young space program. Right now, China's first Mars lander is en route to the planet and should arrive in February. Remember, it was only in 2003 that China put its first astronaut into space, so they've really come a long way very quickly to the point where China could realistically overhaul the US as the premier space power within the next couple of decades.
We are expecting a slew of earnings reports today from both tech companies and retailers. Joining us now is markets editor Quinton Webb in Hong Kong about what we should be watching for and why it matters. Hello again, Quinton.
Hi there, Mark.
Quinton, I want to begin with tech. We have Dell and HP reporting today, but it's also worth mentioning Best Buy as a retailer. But for weeks, we have been watching tech stocks dominate trading on many days. What can these companies' earnings tell us?
Right. So here we're not talking, of course, about the very biggest and most profitable online companies, the Facebook and Googles, etc. of the world. But Dell and HP have to some extent benefited from this kind of working from home trend. It's certainly kind of helped boost laptop sales for them. Although in previous quarters, what they've seen is that has been offset by lower spending on some office supplies. So, you know, servers or printers. It will be interesting to see what their reports tell us about the continuation of that trend in the third quarter. And as you mentioned, Best Buy is a very big consumer electronics retailer, and they've benefited from increased laptop sales and also from sales of things like, you know, gaming consoles and home fitness equipment. So they, in a way, too, are a big kind of working from home or spending more time at home kind of beneficiary.
Let's talk about retail. Companies like Gap and Nordstrom report today. We have seen during the pandemic a change of not only what we wear, but how we buy things such as clothing.
That's right. So it's been a difficult year for some of the retailers. So, you know, Nordstrom stock and some of the other department stores stock has fallen very, very sharply. But actually this month, you know, we've seen Nordstrom shares almost double from very distressed levels. And I think that is partly a sort of expectation that as the world normalizes and vaccines help us get back to a kind of more traditional existence, you know, then maybe some of these kind of high-end rather bricks and mortar retailers will do a bit better again. Something like the Gap is a bit more of a complex story because they've actually already had a bit more success kind of transitioning towards selling more online. Of course, we've got a holiday shortened week this week, and you know, after Thanksgiving we'll see a big splurge of retail spending. But what the retailers say today will be an interesting kind of walk up, if you like, to the kind of most important retail part of the year.
Quinton Webb, always appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mark.
Just ahead, we know it's been a rough year for businesses. As we look at recovery, a lot of it depends on where you live. We'll talk to one of our economic reporters after the break. As we enter the final weeks of 2020, we're getting new data on how the pandemic is affecting businesses around the world. New surveys of purchasing managers out yesterday showed the economic recovery is unfolding in different ways in different parts of the world. To give us the global perspective, let's bring in the WSJ's Paul Hannon. He covers the economic beat from London. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
So, Paul, you've been sorting through a lot of economic data. What do these metrics say about the winners and losers as we near the end of 2020?
It's pretty clear at the moment that China is the big winner. It's riding on the back of a boom in demand for consumer goods, things that people can use in their houses. And that boom is driven by the fact, in part, that people can't leave their houses in large parts of the world, so they can't go to a restaurant or a bar. And instead of doing that, they're buying nice things for themselves. And China is making those nice things. Then you have Europe. It's the big loser because in Europe, you have people who are mostly in lockdown. They're the people who can't go out to the bars and restaurants. And then the US is sort of in the middle. There are some restrictions, some sort of limitations to what you can do, but it's not as severe as it is in Europe. And the result is that the economy is doing a little bit better than the European economy.
Let's focus on this notion of a lockdown because it comes into these conversations a lot. As we saw in Europe, it can perhaps have a negative impact on economic growth, yet at the same time, governments feel it's very necessary, especially for their long-term economic health.
Yeah, if you're just thinking about the economy and not about people's well-being, people's health, it's a trade-off. You take a hit to economic growth in the short term to avoid more damage in the long term. Most economists and most of the people who now specialize in the area of combining economics with immunology agree that you can't really avoid restrictions of some kind to limit the spread of the virus for economic reasons. Eventually, it will get out there, it will get out of control, and you will just have to, you know, lock down even more severely in the future. So lockdowns are not great for the economy, but they seem to be unavoidable in some form. The question is, you know, how targeted you can make them and whether you can control the virus after you ease those restrictions again.
Let's look specifically at the United States. The latest survey showed both services and manufacturing growing this month, despite the surge in coronavirus cases. In fact, the data firm IHS Markit said it was the strongest rate of growth for U.S. businesses since March 2015. Paul, how sustainable is that? What can you tell us about expectations going forward?
You know, we've been through a few waves, if you want to call it that, of the pandemic so far. And we can't rule out that we'll be through a few more waves by the time a vaccine becomes very widely available. And in each case, what we've seen is that people, of their own accord, even without restrictions being needed, become very nervous about engaging in activities that require close physical proximity, social contact, and stop doing those things. So if you see a rise in infections, you will normally see very shortly afterwards a decline in activity in those consumer services that involve, you know, going out and about with people, bars, restaurants that we mentioned earlier. Most economists think that if infections continue to rise at their current rate, that people will become so nervous that eventually it will bring the services sector down, just as it has done in Europe.
And what about manufacturing?
Manufacturing is a different story. Certainly from the first lockdown, this second wave of restrictions mostly doesn't affect manufacturing because that isn't seen as a big vector for infections. And, you know, when you're talking about trade-offs, obviously there is some risk in being in a space with other people, but in manufacturing in a factory, it's much less than if you're in a, you know, a barber shop or whatever. So we've decided this time around, I think, to leave the factories open and to make sure that people can get to those factories using public transport or whatever. So the manufacturing sector is actually doing okay in Europe, in the US, and, you know, especially in China.
Paul Hannon, thanks for breaking this down for us.
Great to talk to you, Mark.
And finally, in the pandemic, we've heard all about supply chain issues for staple consumer goods. But how about a logjam for exercise bikes worth thousands of dollars? Peloton is known for selling $2,000 plus bikes equipped with a screen that shows subscription workout classes. But the company is struggling to keep up with demand, and consumers are griping online, flooding consumer support lines. That's been great news for their smaller rivals. Shares of Nautilus, a competitor making a similar product, have risen tenfold from just a year ago. Peloton is addressing the issues, recently sending a letter to shareholders saying it's doing everything to get their products to prospective members. The company reported its first quarterly profit in September. And that's what's news for Tuesday. We're back tonight with a new show. You can follow the day's earnings releases on WSJ.com and the Journal app. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.